You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where every episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Abdullah Ibrahim, Water from an Ancient Well. In the room, I have Rob.
Hey there.
And on the line, I have Kyle.
Howdy.
Water from an Ancient Well is the jazz album by South African pianist Abdullah Ibrahim. It was first released in 1986 on Black Hawk Records. The producer was Symptheum B. Benjamin, and the genre is jazz. I'm going to read from the book, Andrew Gilbert. Originally known as Dollar Brand, Abdullah Ibrahim is still Africa's greatest jazz musician, a powerful pianist deeply marked by Duke Ellington. Born and raised in Cape Town, Ibrahim started performing as a teenager, singing doo-wop American pop tunes and traditional South African songs. At the same time as the African National Congress was beginning to confront apartheid, Ibrahim, trumpeter Hugh Maslika, and saxophonist Kippie Mokitsi founded the Jazz Pistols, the first black jazz group to record in South Africa. Quote, "We had to create our own voice," he said in 1999. "It's not a question of taking bebop lines and adding it on top of our music. We had to develop vocabulary, and we're still developing it." No album better captures his stately, deceptively simple music than Water from an Ancient Well, featuring the superlative Ikea and flautist Carlos Ward, tenor saxophonist Ricky Ford, baritone saxophonist Charles Davis, bassist David Williams, and drummer Ben Riley. His expansive voicings give the musicians vast territory to explore, while his folk-like themes capture the poetry of daily life in South Africa. The album contains many of his most striking tunes, such as the triumphant Mandela, The Wedding, and Manneberg Revisited, which exemplifies his penchant for combining hypnotic left-hand figures with emotionally soaring melodies. All right, what do we think of Abdullah Ibrahim, Water from an Ancient Well?
This was a delightful surprise.
Super delightful.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I really liked it. It's really chill, though.
Super chill.
It's a very mellow album.
I wish I still smoked cigarettes. It was a beautiful rainy day and I had cups of coffee just staring outside watching it rain. Maybe start a private detective agency. I don't know.
Yeah. It has sort of that feel.
Absolutely. Yeah. During my last listen to it was today. It was kind of a dreary day and it was kind of nice.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice.
I thought it was cool. I mean, this is taking us way back to the Duke Ellington era. Mm-hmm. And this is 1985. So I knew this when I saw this on the page. I was like, "Oh man, this is it's pretty wild to have this in 1985 and right now you're butting up against like Aha, Tears for Fears, and like all these other bands that are doing the synth pop thing, and this is a completely different world."
Yeah, did but you know, sure. was this an odd thing in jazz in 1985?
No, not at all. I mean, it's kind of like classical music where it's standards and people continue to, play older elements. I wouldn't say that,
by standards you mean like arrangements,
yeah,
and
type,
not because he did write all of these songs, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
So, but it wouldn't have been strange for someone to come out, 1985 with like a Duke Ellington album where they just covered Duke Ellington songs or Coltrane or, any of those other artists. So I don't think it's necessarily completely out of place, but at the same time, it feels like this feels so old.
Yeah.
It feels like 1950s.
Were you worried that like a DX7 was just going to start up in the middle of a song?
A little bit. I was like, uh-oh, is there going to be, because I was listening to the flute and I was like, uh-oh, here we go with the, the harmonica is going to just show its face any moment.
We'll get to Yusu Nador.
Yeah.
Later. There's plenty of DX7 on that.
Yeah,
there is.
I did a little bit of research. It wasn't really not that much on the internet just about them. And like you were saying earlier, there are a few documentaries, but I didn't dig that deep.
Sure, I got plenty.
Oh, cool. things I did learn. Mannenberg, which is revisited on this one, became an anti-apartheid like rallying song.
Thought that was cool.
Yeah, there's no lyrics to it, but
yeah,
apparently people are just humming slow jazz tunes in the streets. That's fucking awesome. The first one, Mandela, obviously written about Nelson Mandela. Is it calypso feeling? A little reggae? Like what?
I got a little bit of that, and I think that's the Cape Town. I think that's that Cape Town vibe.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he's the godfather of the Cape Town sound.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know that that was a feel they had down in Cape Town.
I mean, there's a lot of different just minor and minute little divisions of jazz, and especially, you know, African jazz, mixing in different rhythms. This one definitely, I find him so interesting because he truly feels like someone who, you know, studied under Duke Ellington, came over, studied it. I think it was Juilliard, went back Cape Town, and then, you know, kind of developed, his own sense of how to play and how to present the music. You know, he dug deep into the traditional African sounds and elements, but he had all this knowledge. You know, it's like he was well versed in everything, and so he could present. I think that's what makes him so gifted, is he could present based off of everything that he had, you know, received and taken in and studied.
So he bounced out like during the apartheid like thing. He basically went into self-imposed exile because the government was cracking down on artists, and somehow jazz was considered not deviant, but scary and revolutionary.
Yeah.
So he had to actually run away. Did he go to America, or did he end up in France?
Yeah, New York.
New York?
1965. Okay. So he played with, he actually filled in a couple times for Duke Ellington when Ellington couldn't, in 1966, 5 dates when the Duke Ellington Orchestra, Duke just couldn't be there. So that's a pretty big jump from, you know, coming and studying, and then 10 years later, it's like you're literally filling in for a jazz legend.
So you're telling me Duke Ellington's orchestra had a 5-day stay somewhere where Duke Ellington was like, just can't make it, man.
Yeah. I mean, that happens.
It's your cousin Marvin Berry.
It's absolutely. While he was in the U.S., he played and like gravitated towards a lot of progressive musicians. Don Cherry, Ornette Coleman, John Coltrane, Pharoah Sanders, Cecil Taylor, Archie Shepp. And yeah, he like got involved in the Black Power movement, 60s and 70s, and obviously was a part of the apartheid, anti-apartheid movement back in Africa. And I think it's so cool for him to, you know, go back and have that recognition then.
Gao wrote it up really nicely. It's a very, very good one. Main points being that, like, he enjoyed side one quite a bit, but side two is what makes this record special. And trying to listen to this on Spotify, the title track, track one, side two, does not exist. So I had to look it up on YouTube. And after hearing that, like, almost 12-minute opus, I'm like, oh, no shit. This is incredible.
I can't believe
it. Do you know why it's not on Spotify?
No clue, man.
It has to be some sort of rights issue, right?
Who didn't everybody play on all of these songs? So, like, no one's holding out.
I just don't. Yeah, I don't understand. And I don't understand how you can have an album that the song is the name of the album and not have the song on the album. It's weird, though. There was one song I can think of right now. It's like a Janelle Monáe song, and it has Prince on it, and it's not on Spotify. And I know now I'm thinking because it has Prince on it, and Prince had some sort of legality that he was like, I don't want anything streaming or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I can understand that. But this, yeah, you're right. Everyone's on every song for the most part.
It's the titular track. Written by the man who wrote the rest of the album. Very, very strange. But if anyone's listening to this and has been listening to it on Spotify, you need to go to some other streaming service or YouTube and just listen to the song.
What did you think of that song? I mean, 12 minutes.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful piece of work. Like almost like going to church. You know? It's like a big... makes you feel,
it's very grandiose.
Yeah,
it's spiritual, which is a big part of his playing. And I love how, I mean, in a lot of jazz songs, they'll drop out, you know, certain players will drop out and they'll do solos and stuff. I couldn't believe I was jamming to like a flute solo. I was like, damn, this flute solo is good. Like, happens very rarely in jazz. Like, you have to be really good. And then it dropped out into a bass solo, and I was like, I'm here for this bass solo.
Yeah, man.
And that doesn't happen a lot, so.
And it's so laid back still. So what is the term for what Duke Ellington was playing around with? It's not bebop.
Oh, no.
Is it Rocksteady?
Yeah.
Is it the Shredder? Is it Baxter Stockman?
I mean, I'd say traditional. It's kind of traditional jazz.
Okay. So there's no...
I'm trying to think if there's a name for Duke Ellington
style. There's no laid-back jazz name.
I mean, blues jazz. That's very much...
Okay.
Kind of blue. That was modal jazz, but it was like blues, so it has that real... It's like a cool feel. Cool jazz is also a term.
Haven't gone back to revisit that one. Didn't like it. Really enjoyed it in a silent way.
I'm just kind of a seat warmer here, man. I'm way out of my league. I almost called in sick for this episode. So I'd like to apologize to the South African jazz fans out there. Because here's my input. All right, Mandela. Peppy.
Yeah, Mandela. It's a jazzy number with a reggae feel. Maybe Calypso. I should be on a beach.
Song for Satima. Kind of melancholy.
Song for Satima. It's nice rainy day coffee tunes.
Were you drinking coffee today listening to it?
It sure was, motherfucker. That's going to do all of my homework.
Manenberg Revisited. Cool bass groove.
Manenberg Revisited. Apparently an anti-apartheid song. I like the bass work.
Keep going.
I don't want to read this next one.
Okay.
I'm embarrassed. Twang Guru. Busy.
Twang Guru. Yeah. This one is great, too.
I want to hear Water from an Ancient Well, though.
I just put epic.
Epic. Yeah.
Not allowed on Spotify, apparently. Oh, this is the spiritual stuff Kreisgau was referring to. Yep. Weird the title track is omitted from the album on Spotify. This song is beautiful.
Oh, next to The Wedding, I put beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh.
I really like The Wedding.
That was an achingly beautiful song.
Yeah.
Next to The Wedding, I put, you can see Tom Waits eyeballing this track to put sad hobo lyrics on.
It's true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so he returned to Cape Town in 1968. He converted to Islam, hence the name.
Yeah, so his name was actually Dollar Brand.
Dollar Brand.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1970, he made a pilgrimage to Mecca. He says that the thing that drew me to church every Sunday was the sound. In Islam, when I first heard the Quran being recited, it was the sound that touched me very deeply. I didn't know what the words were. I discovered this after, and that's what I found in the church through the recital of the Quran. In the Greek, Kalahari with the sand people, that's what I find in Japan at the Shinto shrine. Find in Japan at the Shinto shrine. So yeah, he, a lot of people talk about his spirituality and how he approaches music. And I think a lot of that has to do with church, Islamic church, and how he perceives music in a way. And he describes a lot of things with his playing as being sort of in this philosophy of being in the like empty space. A lot of performers will talk about when they're riffing or when they're trying to, you know, reach that higher level. He is he's performing and he's playing, but at the same time, he's almost outside of himself while he's performing and playing these things. So he finds that sort of abstract, he calls it abstract destiny, you know, very enlightening. That is like a former, a higher form of an art is being able to do these things without, you know, thought, conscious thought. So I find that, you know, beautiful. And a lot of his stuff is really great. Man, we're listening to Well from an Ancient Land. Or sorry, Well from an...
Water from an Ancient Well.
Well from an Ancient Land. But yeah, can't get enough.
Mm-mm. Yeah, this is really good.
They said too, when he performed, he would play uninterrupted for hours, blending like a plethora of compositions into one continuous suite. Sort of, he has this sort of way he's playing with his left hand while shifting melodies and rhythmic patterns, weaving in and out with his right hand. So there's like no beginning, no ending. So beautiful player. Can't wait to, you know, check out some of his other stuff.
So you're saying he can use both hands on the piano?
Yeah, both hands.
Fucking braggart.
He could probably get a leg up there because apparently he's been studying martial arts for the past 50 years.
Oh, wow.
Budo, and under a sensei, he holds a black belt in karate. Although he says that he's like, he's not so into the like actual like fighting aspect of martial arts. It's more about the spiritual of the practice,
breathing and the movements, man.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about. Yeah, the with his conversion to Islam, like I wonder if any of his later works, he gets more into the like microtonal stuff, with how the Quran's like, you know, sung.
Mm-hmm.
Be interested to.
Yeah, that's a big influence. You mentioned he performed at Mandela's inauguration.
I didn't.
1994, but obviously, you know, he was a big part of that. And I think it's on YouTube right now, so you can see it. It's a great performance. Yeah, actually, there's a couple, you know, documentaries and things with him playing, and everyone I checked out was great. It was like gold.
Yeah, no, Mandela referred to him as our nation's Mozart.
Yeah, pretty. It's pretty high praise. I mean, he's supposed to be people said that he's the most distinguished pianist, you know, in all of Africa. So maybe in the world, too.
I wonder how many of our listeners think that Nelson Mandela died in prison.
I know.
Oh, no.
If you'd like to hear more about the Mandela effect, please refer to our Patreon, where Kyle will talk you all off that ledge.
We've got a Berenstain Bears t-shirt. Tell you.
this is great music. I wish I was a little more competent in my jazz talk.
Doesn't matter.
To break it down a little bit, but I thoroughly fucking enjoyed. Man, that's the first F word I said. Where's my swear jar?
No, I mean, I think he'd be happy to hear you say. Yeah, I mean, it's not a. It's kind of like art too. It's not about knowing everything, right? It's about how the music, how you receive the music and how you think about it. It doesn't have to be every detail about.
It was kind of nice not having a whole bunch of information on the internet that I had to read while like listening to this. I could kind of shut off and like pay more attention. That was
I agree.
That was pretty all right.
Yeah. I'm so happy though, because I feel like you had started off, feel like you started off this journey in a little bit of a Duke Ellington, whatever, I could take it or leave it. And this, it feels like this is
more like Puke Smellington. I think we've already discussed this.
So, here we are in 1985 and you're like, this guy's pretty all right.
And 4 years of Trump, 2 years of COVID have put me in a weird spot, man. Bore me down.
But I will say he does, aside from some of the more bebop-oriented elements, I mean, this does feel a bit more traditional. It has that, it has this spiritual sort of elements, interesting elements, but it has a very melodic sense to it. And all the players are great. Super tight players. Yeah, I think this was a good week for it. I mean, it's been raining for how many days? Like 4 days now. Yeah. So this is kind of a right on point.
One thing I did notice, which I thought was super duper fun, on the song Samito, once it breaks back into I don't even know what you'd describe it as. They play a phrase and then it resolves eventually. Mm-hmm. Like there's a bunch of soloing happening, and then all of a sudden the phrase hits.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun because it's in four, but it goes, it resolves on a 13 to a major chord after just a whole bunch of dissonant, like pops.
Okay.
And that was fun.
Oh, okay.
I counted to 13 and I like to count. So. So that was fun. Thanks, Jazz.
Yeah, I mean, he's described jazz as like the highest, he says it's like the highest form of music.
Tomato potato, my friend.
Yeah. What'd you think of this?
Loved it. Absolutely. There's not a bad song on it. They're all, it's accessible for everybody. It just kind of makes you feel good.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does bring in a lot of jazz, even though I listen to jazz, I still feel like a jazz novice, but it's easy to turn on and easy to enjoy. I feel like it's not that it doesn't have challenging elements, but it feels very, very much like a CD you could pick up at Target.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or play at at a coffee shop or something. And
your parents' car.
No one's going to be running out of the place. What did you think, Kyle?
I like this record a whole bunch. Yeah, it was a nice change of pace. I'm not the biggest jazz guy, but I like what I like, you know? And this is really nice to listen to. Really impressive playing. These guys play really well together. I'm going to recommend it.
Yeah, same here. Must hear. This definitely.
Yep.
I feel like deserves to be in the book, for him as a player, and yeah, it fits right in. It's really nice to have this little subtle break in 1985 too. So, all right, next time we'll be talking about Aha, Hunting High and Low. All right, thanks, y'all.